So, the book of Revelation. Fasten your seatbelt. If you could live absolutely anywhere, I wonder where it would be. What would be the ideal place, your dream forever home? Well, obviously the slate green. But the Bible's answer might be Welling. Why Welling? Well, because it is a garden city, Shirley Austin. Yes, I mean, in fact, any garden city will do. The Bible begins with a garden, Eden, but then things get bigger and better, transformed from one degree of glory to another. It ends with a garden city, this kind of temple city Eden we're going to think about today, where everything is restored and renewed and made better. So if you look at chapter 21, verses 9 and 10, this angelic tour guide says to John, "Come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." So we know the Lamb is Jesus, the ultimate Passover Lamb, the perfect sacrifice for sin. Jesus, the Lamb who was slain, who's now risen and enthroned with God his Father in heaven. And the whole Bible is a love story. Jesus is the prince who kills the dragon and gets the girl. He is the Lamb who conquers. And the church is God's wayward and redeemed bride. Their relationship has been a tempestuous one. The path of true love has not run smooth for God and his people. Israel has been an unfaithful bride, but now the bride is clean and made ready for her wedding day. Jesus has made her splendid and glorious. This is in contrast to the great prostitute in chapter 17, by the way. Some of the wording here is very similar to that. And this part of Revelation is a picture of two women, the harlot and the bride. Maybe in 30 years I might be brave enough to preach my way through the book of the Revelation and we'll see all this. So, verse 9, the angel says, "I'm going to show you the bride of Christ, the church." But then verse 10, what does John actually see? A great and high mountain, the holy city, Jerusalem. And again, this is in contrast to chapter 17, where the harlot is Babylon. So it's two women who are two cities. In our chapter, this bride of Christ, who is the new Jerusalem, the church, the community of God's people. And just like the United States of America, everything here in Revelation is bigger and better. Jerusalem was built on a hill, but it's not exactly the Himalayas. But this new Jerusalem, verse 10, is a great and high mountain. Perhaps it's the vision of Daniel 2, that rock not made by human hands, which breaks the kingdoms of the world and becomes a huge mountain that fills the whole earth. Or it's Isaiah chapter 2, concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the chief of the mountains. It will be raised up above the hills, and the nations will stream to it. And verse 10, this bride city church mountain comes down out of heaven from God. So this towering city is the opposite of the Tower of Babel, Babylon, from Genesis 11. Remember that story where the people try to reach up to heaven as if to storm God's place and usurp it? If you're feeling grumpy, you might say that this passage is the opposite of that much-loved hymn, Jerusalem. You know, we will build Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant lands. Well, I think Revelation would say, let's not be too optimistic. According to the Bible, it's Jesus who's going to build his church. Now, of course, by the grace of God and the power of the Spirit, we play our part in it. But we should be cautious about those heroic hymns. It all depends on God. The New Jerusalem doesn't come up from earth to heaven like Babel. It comes down out of heaven from God. God must do it, and he's going to. It will be his work. Yes, using us, but this is the essence of the gospel, really. It's not try harder, do better, and maybe somehow if you're fabulous you can reach up to heaven. The gospel is that God has come down. That's Christmas, isn't it? The grace of God, his stoop. We are to pray, your kingdom come, but God will do it. We can't do it by our unaided human effort. Well, in Garden City is not paradise, is it? I've never been, but human attempts to build heaven on earth without God often end in tears. Here is a better and true vision of what God will do. Now, the lectionary which we're obediently following for this misses out verses 11 to 21, so they could be your homework. They tell us all about the splendour and beauty and glory of the city, but there's one architectural detail that's worth noticing in verse 16. The city is a square as long as it is wide, and then it is as high as it's long. So it's a cube or maybe a pyramid. Now in the Bible, the Holy of Holies at the centre of the temple was a cube. That was the place where God's glory was. And now the whole city is a cube or maybe a pyramid. Perhaps it's a holy mountain, but it's probably a new Holy of Holies. The old city contains the Holy of Holies, but the new city is bigger and better because it is the Holy of Holies. And it's enormous. The measurements in verse 16 are apparently half the size of the United States of America and as high as 260 Mount Everest on top of each other. It is very, very big. A new and better temple city. And in this strange guided tour, John tells us six things that he didn't see. It'd be an odd way just to relate your holiday, wouldn't it? You know, how was your holiday? Oh, well, yes, I didn't see this, I didn't see that. This is the pattern here. I didn't see this because so-and-so. So firstly, there's no temple, verse 22. This would be a big shock to the Jews. I mean, you might think, no great shake. There are no temples in Warburton, are there? And we're doing fine without them. But in the ancient world, the temple was a great thing for the Jews, and every pagan city would have a temple, probably lots of temples, where the patron deities would look after them. So no temple means that the entire Old Testament system, which was centred on the temple, has come to an end. For the Bible writers, the Old Testament with its temple was just the first draft, the model. It's the shadow that points to the greater reality. So now it's as if the building has been finally refurbished and the scaffolding, the temple, can be taken down. The destination has come, so you don't need the signpost anymore. And what the temple pointed to has now been revealed, now been fulfilled. God's presence and reconciliation with God. The temple was the place to go to meet with God where he dwelt. Verse 22, God and the Lamb are the temple. Normally people build temples for their gods, but God is going to be his people's temple. We're used to that idea if we know about Jesus. He was a kind of living, breathing tabernacle temple walking around on earth. The Word became flesh and tabernacled amongst us, made his dwelling amongst us, pitched his tent amongst us. So Jesus was the place to go to meet with God and to be put right with God. Jesus said, speaking of his body, tear down this temple and I will build it again in 3 days' time. Jesus is the sacrifice of the temple, the Lamb of God. And Jesus predicted the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, and true enough, AD 70, the Romans come and destroy it. No more temple needed because Jesus has made the way to God. who is full and free access to God for all who will trust in him. But the carefully controlled approach to God, ever since Adam and Eve were expelled from Eden, is ended. The temple was a series of no entries. It said, God wants to know you, you can come to him and be put right with him, but careful, come on his terms, only so far, only under certain conditions. But when Jesus dies, the curtain in the temple is torn in two from top to bottom. The way to God is open. No temple. And verse 23, no need for sun or moon. In the new creation, even the sun will be redundant. Because, verse 23, the glory of God will give it light. The Lamb will be its light. Here is a wonderful city, full of the shining splendour and glory of God in all its brilliance. Jesus, the light of the world, will illuminate it. So there'll be no darkness or evil or wickedness, no need or desire to hide. And no need to shut the gates, because there will be no night, verse 25. It's a place of complete security, no danger or threat. In the new creation, you'll be able to leave your front door open. If you're a locksmith or a burglar alarm salesman, you will have to retrain in the new creation. You'll be unemployed. It will be open and welcoming. But there will be exclusion, verse 27. Evil will be permanently shut out. Nothing impure or shameful or deceitful will be there. But only those whose names are written in Jesus the Lamb's Book of Life. Those who trusted in Jesus for whom he died. I've never been to a sufficiently posh party, but if you go to you're a sort of celebrity, you go to a very posh party, presumably there's a VIP guest list, or they usher you into the nightclub because your name is down on the list. Well, so it will be with the Lamb's Book of Life. All those and only those whose names are down will get in, those who've made a reservation, those who've trusted in Jesus. Nothing more important than that, really. A better new temple city, a better new Eden city. I made this a separate point, but really it's kind of the same, because we know Eden was a sort of mountain and temple. Adam and Eve would meet with God there, and Adam was the sort of priest custodian of the garden. But this is a new and better Eden. Just as streams flowed out from Eden, so the river of the water of life will flow out from this garden temple city. It will cleanse and refresh and renew. Remember Jesus' conversation with that woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, John chapter 4. The sun is beating down and Jesus says, I could give you a drink. That if you drink it, you'll never thirst again. You'll be satisfied. He said that the Spirit could be like the water of life welling up in you and flowing out of you. Rivers of life and a tree of life. Again, a sort of transformation and a making better of Eden. Now, I'm no expert on fruit, but I believe that if you go to the supermarket, you can get fruit, even in winter these days. But that would be weird, of course, in the ancient world. Fruit would be seasonal. But here is a fruit tree where every month it produces its fruit. So there's a constant, abundant supply. And it's for the healing of the nations. Everything will be put to right. Here is life. The water of life, the tree of life. No more death, no more curse, no more judgment against sin. Genesis 3, where God curses Adam and Eve and the ground, undone. Because Jesus took the curse for all who had put their trust in him. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. And what will be the best thing about heaven and the new creation? It will be that God and the Lamb will be there. The blessings will be wonderful. But the best thing will be God himself. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him, and they will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. They will see God. Now, you could do a Bible study on the theme of seeing God, as you could do on much of the rest of this chapter. In the Bible, no one could see God and live because of their sin. But now, then, we will have access to God. Our sin which separated us from God has been dealt with by Jesus. Now, every schoolboy knows, of course, that God the Father has no body or parts. He is an invisible spirit. But he's revealed himself and made himself known. We see his glory in the face of Christ. So seeing God's face is the ultimate in knowing God. You know, God doesn't just send us an email or a text or leave us a voicemail. The hope of the Bible is that we will see God face to face. We'll have an unhindered fellowship and friendship with him, face to face, as a person talks to his friend. And God's name will be on their foreheads. Revelation has been going on about these seals and marks. Some people have the seal or name or mark of God on them. Some people have had the mark of the beast on them, on their foreheads. It's a sign of ownership and allegiance, of status and protection. They will have God's name on them because they will be his people and they'll belong to him. They'll be like Aaron, the high priest in the Old Testament, who had the name of God on a gold plate on his turban. Now all God's people will be priests with access to him, like Aaron had. And it will have no end. Well, I'm conscious we probably haven't done justice to, well, I'm sure we haven't done justice to this wonderful vision. But have you booked? Will you be there? You're invited. Is your name in the Lamb's Book of Life? Just look at chapter 22, verse 14. Have you washed your robes that you might have a right to eat of the tree of life and may go through the gates into the city? Or look at chapter 22, verse 17. Jesus said, come. Whoever is thirsty, let him come. And whoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. Will you come? If you're a believer, this vision is your future, your real identity, your destiny. Will you live for this vision? Will you pray and work that the church might be more and more what she will be one day in all her fullness? Let's just take a moment's quiet and reflect on what God has said to us in his word.